It is a very, very great pleasure and a huge privilege to keep the feast with you this morning. My particular thanks to a dear friend and an inspiring brother priest, Father Archie, for inviting me to fly over from Great Britain to be with you this Michaelmas. Now, please forgive me, but on this red letter day, and as I stand looking out at you this morning, I can't help but be reminded of the trip that, in 1842, Queen Victoria paid to London Zoo. I mean no offense when I tell you that Her Majesty went to visit the orangutans. And she was not amused. Writing in her diary, Victoria recorded that the orangutan is frightfully and painfully and disagreeably human. Prophetic words, perhaps, because only a decade or so after that diary entry, apes were all the rage, with heated public disputes of all kinds erupting and abounding in the years immediately before and certainly immediately following the publication of Mr. Darwin's Origin of Species in 1859. Mid-Victorian passions were running high. In his contribution to the controversy that raged, Benjamin Disraeli, Victoria's very favorite prime minister, it was said that she laid primroses on his grave, made his own memorable speech to the Oxford Diocesan Conference in 1864, in which he came down very clearly on the side of St. Michael. "My Lord Bishop," Disraeli said, "is man an ape or an angel? I am on the side of the angels. I am on the side of the angels. And how could we not be, as today we keep St. Michael's Day, the warrior angel of God and your heavenly co-patron?" It is for good reason that Mr. Disraeli felt quite so allied to the angelic hosts above in opposition to the apes beneath. Because angels have always represented to man man's highest and noblest and purest ideals. In every age of human history, angels have manifested to mankind those virtues which belong, we feel, to our better nature. Angels champion for us everything that we feel is angelic in us, in opposition to that which belongs, if you like, to our baser nature and the apish instincts of our inner animal. We are on the side of the angels because of all that angels tell us about us. And indeed, the heavenly host has a great deal to teach thee and me about our own calling and our truest identity as Christian men and women. You could say that Michael and his angels illuminate for us the depth of our Christian vocation. They instruct us in our better selves. But how? Well, time this morning only allows for three examples of the ways in which angels might inspire. The first is to note that angels in the biblical tradition are, above all, messengers. Indeed, the very word in Greek, angelos, means precisely that. And we see this, don't we, in the example of the exiled and exhausted Jacob, who is visited by a vision of angels as he lies with his head upon a pillow of rocks and his eyes gazing starward. He sees a vision of angels ascending and descending betwixt earth and the heavens. The message that this vision brings him is the message of God's fertile promise that the wide earth will be filled with Jacob's offspring and that God will be with Jacob always. It is not God who appeared to Jacob beneath the stars in that desert place, but the angels of God. You see, the ancient Hebrews understood that the nature of God is supremely and indescribably different from our own. God's nature is as utterly other from our nature as sound is from silence. And because of God's transcendence, if we could encounter it, would consume us like fire, the ministry of angels is instituted by God to mediate his presence and to proclaim his will to the imminent and earthbound world. That is why angels erupt so often in the Hebrew scriptures. They are present to mankind in order to mediate God's eternal, blazing, incomprehensible glory. And of their many missions and messages to mankind, never was there one greater than Gabriel's to a virgin. This, then, is the first of three lessons we might learn on this St. Michael's Day, that the Christian Church and those who belong to it through baptism are called, like angels, to proclaim the presence of God and impart the glad tidings of his love. Ours, friends, is an angelic vocation. Our calling in the world is to be messengers of God's love and mediators of God's presence to a world which is all too blind to his glory, deaf to his word, and dumb in his praise. A Christian's vocation, it seems to me, is to echo the angels by speaking of God to man, of heaven to earth. The second area of angelic activity that just might inspire our own comes from the heavenly warfare we hear of in Revelation. Michael the Vanquisher expels from heaven's realm Satan and his rebel band, sending them headlong down into pandemonium. Michael defeats the deceiver, and he defends the truth and the unity of God's kingdom by routing the angel whose sin was to liken himself unto God, and who, by so doing, lost paradise. Christians, when they are baptized in the rites and ceremonies of the Church of England, at least, are charged by the priest with some stirring words. Fight valiantly as a soldier and servant of Christ against sin, the world, and the devil, and remain faithful to Christ to the end of your life. Angels, in all their heavenly valor, ought to steel us to be valiant too, and energetic in the defense of God's truth. In societies which have fallen so quickly and easily into idolatry, and the cruel, destructive deception that we are like unto God, with all of the suffering and the self-harm and the inhumanity that flows from that grave error, never more was it needed than now for the Christian Church to be militant, bold and purposeful in its earthly pilgrimage, confident and strong in defending the gospel of life against a cult and culture of death that deceives and seduces so very many in our generation. Yet Revelation is not only a book about wars in heaven and woes upon the earth. It is a book with many icons of heavenly worship, in which the angels do not wield swords, but are music makers. And this is the third insight imparted to us, I think, this Michaelmas. Angels are agents of praise. Having put down sword and shield, they are ready in Revelation to pick up trumpet and drum, in fact, all manner of celestial instruments, and put them to use in the merry praise of their Maker. In my parish back in London, we have a very grand west window, which Herr Hitler succeeded in blowing out in 1942, but which we replaced in the late 1940s, a fine stained glass window picturing the Te Deum Laudamus, We praise thee, O God, we acknowledge thee to be the Lord. All the earth doth worship thee, the Father everlasting. To thee all angels cry aloud. And in this window, in all its vivid colour, the angels fly in mid-heaven and are all music-makers. But instead of playing flute and harp, more regular angelic instruments, you might think, for some reason they are all pictured playing the bagpipes. You know what they say? One man's heaven is another man's hell. But worship belongs to humanity's better nature. Worship belongs to our truest selves. Indeed, we might say that it is only within the liturgy of the church that we discover the essence of who we were created to be. Because, my friends, we were not created to consume or to earn ever more or to acquire ever greater stuff, but to adore. It is in worship that we live and move and find our being. It is in this Eucharistic rite and in the Eucharistic quality of our lives that we find our lives. Not only in offering worship to God, but being the worship we offer to God. Or as the ancient Book of Common Prayer of the Church of England says, praising him not only with our lips, but in our lives. So there we have it. On this Day of Angels, we are recalled to what it might mean for us to live a fuller, richer, more mysterious Christian life. One which is eager to proclaim God's good news. One which is valiant to defend God's eternal truths. And one which is ever ready to hymn God's glory. For those reasons alone, we, like Mr. Disraeli, are on the side of the angels. But there is one more thing, and it might surprise you to hear it. I fear that, as highly as angels are to be honored, especially on this their feast day, angels are to be pitied also. Angels are to be pitied because for all of their wonder and power, they are not human. Yes, they keep the company of the saints. Yes, they dwell in light unapproachable. Yes, they continually behold God's glory, but they do not bear his image and likeness. The angel's luster may seem greater than our own, for ours, is it not, is a frail and fleshly existence. But it is not into their nature that God has written his image. But in ours. It is to man that God has given that singular and unique and eternal dignity. The angelic ones do not suffer or decay. They do not know pain. And their dignity and their glory is the less because of it. Above all the things that Michaelmas awakens us to, this is the most crucial, I think, that God did not come amongst us in the splendor of an angel, though there was an early and detestable Christian heresy that claimed he did. God visited us in the flesh, and the angels wondered at the sight of it. God the Son suffered and died in the flesh, and the angels turned away, unable to behold the glory of it. God the Son rose in our flesh, and the angels poured forth the praise of all creation. Not to angels did God give this honor. His loving, healing, saving gaze does not fall upon them, but upon us and the world. We may well look to the angels in admiration and honor this day, as well we might. We may wish that our existence was free of change and pain, as theirs is. But just perhaps, the angels look upon us today with equal and even greater wonder, because they know that it is toward us and all mankind that God has turned his love. Happy Michaelmas.